All our participants are either from Franklin or St. Lawrence counties, and the vast majority are from the six-town area of St. Regis Falls, Santa Clara, Dickinson, Nickelville, Hopkinton, and Fort Jackson. The main purpose of our festival goes much deeper, we hope, than entertainment. The material presented is part of our cultural heritage here in the North Country. It is as much a part of our identity as our language, our religious beliefs, and our ways of making a living. We hope that the end result of this program tonight will be greater awareness of local culture and greater appreciation of local traditional performers. By traditional performers, we mean men and women who've learned their music and dances and songs from their relatives and their friends, not from the media and not from books. Our performers tonight are all amateurs, and the word amateur means a man or woman who does something for the sheer love of it. It won't be that greatly polished a performance. It will be pretty much as you might have seen 40 or 50 years ago at a logging camp or a square dance or a hall dance. The evening is sponsored by the Neighbors Craft Mart of the six-town area. Part of the proceeds will go towards construction of a community theater and a community store where the craft products of people in the six-town area can be displayed and sold, and where their talent can have a forum. Our first performer tonight is Mr. Del Parmeter from Chateauguay. He's both a fiddler and a square dance caller, and we'll see him in both capacities tonight. It's very fitting to start off this program with a fiddler, because the fiddle and fiddle music are perhaps the most characteristic instrument and characteristic music of this North Country. Now, the fiddle is related to the violin, and the violin is known all over Europe, but the fiddle and the fast fiddle tune, the jig, the reel, the breakdown, and the hornpipe are most characteristic of the British Isles, England, and Ireland. We in America take the fiddle for granted as a typically American instrument, but really it's a physical evidence of immigration to the North Country, to the United States as a whole. Mr. Parmeter will begin the program by playing Uncle Jim and the Flop-Eared Mule. Mr. Parmeter.
Get his ears tangled up in the mic here. Thank you.
As anybody who's lived in the North Country, and especially in the Sixtown area, knows, logging has had a tremendous influence on life up here. Of course, you also know that three of the largest companies to log this area, to fell thousands of trees and to provide work for men, were the St. Regis Paper Company, the Brooklyn Cooperage, and the Ovalwood Dish. One of the largest lumbering areas was the Everton Tract, not too far from St. Regis Falls itself. You see here on the stage, very obviously, an axe, a buck saw, and a crosscut saw. The axe was the only means of cutting timber in the North Country until about 1891. About that year, perhaps a little later, the crosscut was introduced, some people say by Scandinavians. Up until 1891, men could cut with an axe about 70 trees a day if they were strong. After 1891, with the crosscut, perhaps two men could cut 100 trees a day. You'd think after work like this that not very many men would have energy to entertain themselves at night, but they did. They had a saying in the logging camps which they told newcomers, either tell a story, sing a song, step dance, or climb the stovepipe. And the man that told me that anecdote is Ambrose Starks, who will be our next performer. He's a resident, a lifetime resident of this area. He's worked for Sisson's Company in the St. Lawrence County. He's worked for John Cutting. He's worked in the Everton Tract. And he'll be singing the most popular, the most common, and one of the oldest American lumberjack ballads, The Jam on Jerry's Rock, or Gary's Rock. A ballad is a folk song that tells a story. It tells it objectively, that is, there's no commentary by the singer. It focuses on one main character and on one particular incident. The Jam on Jerry's Rock is about death in a log jam, and even if many of these loggers weren't experienced with jams, they could sympathize and appreciate something like this. Ambrose will also be telling you about his peavey and his cant hook and that Adirondack pack basket, which is his. So Ambrose, are you ready?
Kind friends, this is a cant hook used on the river drive, mostly for rolling logs in a yard or in the woods. I have a peavey. I'll show you the difference. This also has a hook. You can roll a log, but also there's a heavy spike here. It was used for prying a log loose like a crowbar. Where one man could pry that log up with this, six men could move it with a rolling holt on a hook. Now I want to tell you about my pipe. This toy I bought in lumber camp near the Parrishville River. Indian made it on their spare time. I gave $3 for it. At the same time, I would have paid $6 for it at the hardware. So I thought it was a good deal. I've had the basket 20 years. It's used in the woods and fields for carrying everything that was worth carrying. Now I'll sing you a very good song, one of the oldest and one known to a lot of people and several states, The Jam on Gary's Rock. Come all you noble rivermen and listen while I relate. It's all about a riverman and his untimely fate. It was all about a riverman, so manly, true, and brave, at the Jam on Gary's Rock, where he met with a watery grave. It was early on one Sunday morn, as you will quickly hear, our logs were piled up mountain high, we scarcely keep them clear. Monroe said, turn out, my good boys, avoid your heart from fear. We'll break the jam on Gary's Rock, for Egan's town will steer. Some of them were willing, while others they were not, to break jams on Sunday morn, they didn't think they ought. But six bold Canadian lads did volunteer to go to to break a jam on Gary's Rock with a foreman, young Monroe. They had not rolled down many logs when they heard his clear voice say, "I'd have you on guard, my brave boy. The jam will soon break away." Those words were scarcely spoken, and the jam did break and go. Carried down six bold youths, the foreman, Jack Monroe. Some of the mangled bodies floating down did go, while crushed and bleeding near the bank was that of Jack Monroe. They took him from his watery grave, brushed back his waving hair, his true love there from Saginaw town, whose cries did rent the air. His true love there from Saginaw town, whose moans and cries rose to the skies, for her true love who'd gone down. Now Clara was a noble girl, the shanty lad's true friend. She lived with her widowed mother, they lived on the river bend. Come all you noble rivermen, and for your comrade pray. They buried him with sorrow deep, was on the 1st of May. The boss to paid her the wages of her own true love. The boss to her did pay, and all the boys made up to her a handsome purse next day. Fair Clara did not long survive, her heart broke down with grief. 6 months scarcely had gone by when death came to her relief. 6 months had scarcely gone by when she was called to go, and her last request was to be buried by Monroe. They cleared away the willow brakes, for the lovers they laid low. 'Twas the handsome Clara Vernon and the foreman, young Monroe. Come all you noble rivermen, I'd have you call and see. The grave is neath the willow branch, and initials carved on a hemlock tree.
It's sort of strange to see one man get up and perform alone when we're trying to pretend this is a logging camp, because in the camps themselves, there would have been a whole group of men perhaps sitting, or certainly sitting around, and if sometimes they would chime in, and sometimes they would fill in a word in a song that they knew differently. In any case, we go now to a step dance, which is also a type of entertainment that would certainly be found in a logging camp of 50 or 60 or more years ago. Dancing is a traditional activity among human beings and one of the oldest. It was perhaps first had a ritual purpose, that is, it was part of religion. It's now mainly recreational. The step dance is sort of like a patchwork quilt. The general idea is known to everybody, but the individual details are up to the individual dancer. We might compare the individual steps to the color that a woman chooses to put in her patchwork quilt. Our dancers tonight are Mr. Garland Creighton, who has been doing this, I think, probably started around 70 years ago, if not longer, Benny Martin, Regina Winters, Mona Kimball, Ray Taverney, and Barbara Martin. The musicians are Ray Taverney and Peachy Arquette on the fiddle, and Snooks Martin on the bottles. The dancers will perform without a break in the music, except for one place. And by the way, if you feel like clapping or singing along, I'm sure there's nothing they'd like better. Thank you. talking about tradition tonight, and now we're going to illustrate it a little more. We're going to have two traditional songs of the Sixtown area. They were learned originally by Mrs. Dorothy Provo, who couldn't be here tonight. She learned them when her father worked in the lumber camps. She taught them to Mrs. Dorothy McCaslin, who will sing them. The first one is called The Lumberjack's Waltz, and it's a lyric song. That is, they sing it mostly because it rhymes, and it has the same message in every verse. The second one is Chandelier's Mill, and this is a ballad, just like the jam on Jerry's Rock. It focuses on one dramatic incident. So now we'll have Mrs. Dorothy McCaslin singing The Lumberjack's Waltz and Chandelier's Mill. Dorothy?
The lights are dim and low in a tavern tonight, as I sit all alone with a heart that's lost. The laughing crowd don't know, tears are ready to fall, as I listen to your lumberjack waltz. I'm so blue tonight, while another holds you tight, and I dance to the lumberjack waltz. There's no use to go to my lonesome room. I can't sleep, I just turn and toss. And when the crowd says goodbye, I'll be all alone to cry, but I'll still listen to your lumberjack waltz. I'm so blue tonight, while another holds you tight, and I dance to your lumberjack waltz. I came to the falls, and I got in a fight, and by the police I was dragged out of sight. And I served 30 days in the Crowbar Hotel, and that's how I landed at Chandelier Mills. Down, down, diddly day, down to Chandelier Mills. Hard out to Joe Alfred, the logs to roll down, with a hard-hearted hosier named Albert Round. He was tough and as strong as a common sawmill, and I'd bound to keep up myself if I could. Down, down, diddledy-day, down to Chandelier Mills. Now the job is all finished and the work's all done. We are all tired and our horses are tired. Down, down, diddledy-day, down to Chandelier
I told you we weren't professional. But I'd like to point out that this is really the way tradition is passed down. One person learns it and perhaps doesn't learn it exactly perfectly, but they will pass it down. And this accounts for a lot of the changes that occur in American traditional music, the idiosyncrasies of the memory of different people. Any case, we now have David Palmer, whose history in this Sixtown area in this North Country goes back a very long way. He says his ancestors have been here since there's been anybody. He learned his harmonica or mouth organ playing from his uncles and from his father. Again, this is in the traditional way, the way of folklore. There are two basic styles, as I see it, of American mouth organ or harmonica playing. One is the simple emphasis on the melody, which David will display. And the other contains many more embellishments. It may remind you of Baroque music. The four tunes he's going to play are called The Wreck of the Old 97, Polly Wally Doodle, Red Wing, and Shortening Bread. And I'd like to point out also that the names for a lot of American tunes are a lot younger than the tunes themselves, which may go back a couple of hundred years. So now, David Palmer and the mouth organ. Thank you. See now a very old instrument and a very new instrument combined together. Snooks Martin will play the bottles, and Peachy Arquette will play the fiddle, and we'll have a couple of renditions of Turkey in the Straw. Always fun to expect something and then have it happen. We now go to something that is as about as opposite to what we just saw as could possibly be. We go from the logging camp to a program typical of a country schoolhouse, perhaps the Christmas exercises of 50 years ago. We'll have a typical late 19th century sentimental piece by a woman who is a schoolteacher who sent herself and has probably put on a couple of these in her lifetime. Mrs. Bertha Giffen will now recite, "Which One Are You Going to Drown?"
There were two little kittens, a black and a gray, when Grandma said with a frown, "It'll never do to keep them both. That black one you'd better drown." "Oh, don't cry, my dear," to Tiny Bess. "One kitten's enough to keep. So run to nurse. It's getting late. It's time you were fast asleep." Next morning, down rosy and sweet came little Bess from her nap. When the nurse said, "Go in Mama's room and look in Grandma's lap." "Come here," said Grandma with a smile from the rocking chair where she sat. "God has sent you two little sisters. What do you think of that?" Bess looked at the babes for a moment, with her tiny head yellow and brown. And then to Grandma, soberly, she said, "Which one are you going to drown?"
That was basically a sentimental piece, and now we'll have a something a little more serious, down to earth. Mrs. Garland Creighton from Dickinson Center will recite a poem written by Mrs. Beatrice Richards, also of Dickinson. The poem reflects the hard weather and the hard life that many people, all people, live up here in the North Country. It also points out that many of them did leave in the 19th century to go to the fertile fields of Ohio or California, and in the 20th and late 19th centuries to the mills of Connecticut or Massachusetts. All of this, I think, is contained in Mrs. Creighton's poem. Well, Mrs. Creighton?
Winter is cold. The snow is piled around in peaks. The cold surely makes my old bones creep. The wind moans as it sweeps around my cabin door. The old man lies around and sleeps. It sure does give me the creeps, the way he moans and snores. You have to sit right close to the stove while about burning off your clothes. The chills are running down my spine. I tell you now, that sure feels fine. When another winter rolls around, you'll find me a long ways from this town. I'm sick and tired of cold and snow, and I've made up my mind to go. And if the old man disagrees, I'll tell him he can stay and freeze. I'm heading my feet down California way, where the birds sing in the winter and the farmers make hay.
Mrs. Nevada Snell is now going to recite a poem she wrote herself during the long nights when she was taking care of the farm during her husband's illness. It shows remarkable sense of humor in the face of what I'm sure was great difficulties, she being a woman and having the whole burden of the farm on herself. It's called "Teaching a Calf to Drink."
This happened to me some 60 years ago on the farm. The toughest job on earth, I think, is teaching stubborn calves to drink. Unmoved by love or force or praise, unorthodox in all their ways. They openly defy the plan of nature, science, and of man. 2 weeks ago, with love and care, I weaned old Betsy's latest heir. And since that day, with every breath, he states his plan to starve to death. He's been so long without his feet. He's lantern-jawed and wobble-kneed. He's just a rack of peaks and points, protruding ribs and knobby joints. While every day his backbone gets more like a roll of bayonets. I've done my best, but I can't force his dinner down the proper course. But every mess goes on my clothes, on my shoes, or up my nose. This morning in our daily belt, I vowed we two would have it out. I tied that calf to the cow barn door. I roped his legs to a two before. Now, says I, it's up to you to drink or perish, one of the two. I pried apart his vice-like gums and clamped his nose with my two strong thumbs. I rammed his nose into the old feed pail to the first big joint of his whip-like tail. Although a weak and wasted calf, he loosed his legs with a kick and a half. Then, biff, he pushed like a battering ram, his head in that pail, in my diaphragm. He knocked me down in the straw and dirt. He got footprints all over my shirt. I'm black and blue from my heels to my chin. I've lost 2 yards and a half of skin. And still that calf, ungrateful fiend, has drunk no milk since he was weaned.
Now we have, instead of a song that we know the author of, we have a traditional song written, no doubt, by someone in the North Country, in the Sixtown area, but we don't know who. But we do know who it's written about. It's written about the friends and the grandfather and the ancestors of the lady that's going to sing it. So Carol Niles will come out and tell you about Thibault's old mill herself.
The first thing I'd like to tell you is that the song, nonsensical as it may be, I learned from my father, and it's a song I have heard ever since I can remember. At one point in the song, it refers to three jolly good fellows who get together to have themselves a little fun. And I thought maybe it'd be interesting for you to know that the three men referred to in the song, one of them was Sam Drew, who was the uncle of Donald Drew, who was a lifelong resident of this area. The second man was Jerome Clark, who was Ada Betterly's father, and who at one time lived in the house where Buck John Drew lives in Dickinson Center now. The third man was James Aaron Fadden, my grandfather. Now here's the song. You all know the tavern that stands on the hill at the foot of Blue Mountain by Thibault's sawmill. Three jolly good fellows together did meet to have a little whiskey and something to eat. And you're welcome all, free-heartedly welcome, granderly welcome, everyone. Now they all knew old Merrill was getting quite old, and someday next winter he'd die with the cold. So down to Thibault's old Jimmy did creep and seized old Merrill quite fast asleep. And you're welcome all, free-heartedly welcome, granderly welcome, everyone. He dragged the old dog across an old pine log, and with a dull axe he killed Thibault's old dog. He cut off the head, the forepaws, and the tail, and neatly he slapped the hindquarters in a pail. Then putting the pail quite neat on his arm, away he did jog to enter the tavern with Thibault's old dog. And you're welcome all, free-heartedly welcome, granderly welcome, everyone. Now after they'd eaten, all filled and well stuffed,
Then spoke old Lige how they grunted and puffed, and Mary Ann was so welly pleased that she took down the bottle for Jimmy to treat. And you're welcome all, free-heartedly welcome, granderly welcome, everyone. Thank you.
In addition to the fiddle, the harmonica, and the bottles, we're now going to add the piano in a combination we haven't had before. Many of you will remember the combination of fiddle and piano from kitchen dances, but we're just going to add a couple of other instruments, and for all we know, they may have occurred at kitchen dances, and add a little pep to it. So, again, here's another one where the audience can sing and clap along. In fact, you can clap along to any of them. It will be Del Parmeter on the fiddle, Ross Sommier from Malone on the mouth organ, Mrs. Bertha Giffen right here from St. Regis Falls on the piano, and Snooks Martin again on the bottles, and they'll be playing Little Brown Jug. It'll be obvious that Snooks is playing the spoons, not the bottles. Second part of the program, we'll be having quite a bit of dancing, and we're just going to start introducing it now with an old-fashioned waltz. And I like to point out, as I've been talking all evening, that there are different versions of things, and in folklore, you can't really say one thing is any better than another, merely different. This may become evident when we have our waltz. It will be the Peekaboo Waltz, and the participants will be Ray and Audrey Taverney, Benny Martin and Carol Niles, Regina Winters and Wallace Winters. Mr. Parmeter will play on the fiddle and Mrs. Giffen on the piano, and it will be the Peekaboo Waltz. Thank you. Now we'll have intermission and a chance to look at some material folklore. We have a room set up in back with a great deal of furniture from, let's say, 60, 70 years ago or a little earlier, and a lot of old-fashioned pastries and drinks at the back of the hall. It's all about 10 cents, a pretty reasonable old-fashioned price. And the intermission will last about 20 minutes, we think.